Task Force X is an off-the-books government strike team made up of convicts with no hope for release, serving as expendable agents for impossible missions.
And I am Aaron Moss, a.k.a. Brotherhead, your host on Task Force X. And I'm here to chronicle the tales of the Suicide Squad.
I'm Amanda Waller. I'm here to indoctrinate you convicts into our special forces. Nobody screws the wall!
Let's go ahead and get started.
Welcome, squad mates, to Task Force X, Episode 64. First off, I've got a new mic, so hopefully this works good. My mixing board might back up a second. My son, Grayson, has a new puppy named Crash, who's a weenie dog. And the damn thing chewed through my power cord on my mixing board. So I ended up ordering me a new mic that I heard about from a fellow podcaster that works at a local comic shop. So I'm trying this out. So hopefully this works good. But anyways, let's go and get started with this newest episode. To start out this month, we're going to have the return of an old feature, Character Profiles. Character Profiles is where I take a look at one of the characters that appears in the book and give some background and more information on the character. I used to do this once in a while in earlier episodes, but then I didn't really have new characters for a while. But we've got some now, so I'm going to do a return to the Character Profiles. So this month, we're looking at the Thinker. Five different villains went by this name. We're only going to talk about the first two, really, because everyone else appears after this. So the first one was Clifford DeVoe, who was an enemy of Jay Garrick. And then the second one, Clifford Carmichael, was an enemy of Firestorm. So for Clifford DeVoe, he first appeared in All Flash number 12, September of 1943. Again, he fought the Golden Age Flash. His alter ego was Clifford DeVoe. Species was a human cyborg. He appeared in the Flash comics and the Justice Society of America. He joined the squad, and this is where our interest gets into it, back in the Suicide Squad Doom Patrol special, which we covered back on episode 21. He was killed by the Weasel. In the future, again, yes, he died, but he will return. Over in the Flash, volume 2, issue 134, which came out February of 1998, apparently he returns and he's dying from cancer due to his cap. And again, he supposedly dies in that same issue, so... Also, this version of the Thinker, if I'm not mistaken, appeared in the Flash TV series. So, and then we move on to the second Thinker, which we've introduced here in this very show. I guess he didn't appear here first, but we'll get to that. The second Thinker was Cliff Carmichael, who first appeared in Firestorm, The Nuclear Man number 1, March of 1978. As the Thinker, he appeared first in Firestorm, The Nuclear Man number 99, July of 1990. He was created by Jerry Conway, Al Milgram, great creators, just because they created the firearm. But anyways, Clifford Carmichael was an intellectual bully and the rival of Ronnie Raymond, half of Firestorm, over at Bradley High and later at Vandermeer University. Think of a smart version of Flash Thompson from Spider-Man. Cliff viewed Ronnie as a rival due to his popularity. He tormented Ronnie throughout his high school career and later at Vandermeer University. It was at Vandermeer that Cliff's pranks turned sinister as he cut the helmet strings on Ronnie's football helmet, hoping to get him injured. Cliff's cousin, Hugo Hammer, accidentally took Ronnie's helmet. During a football game, Hugo's neck was broken. Racked from guilt after accidentally paralyzing his cousin, Cliff was admitted to a mental institution. For some reason, scientists started an experiment with the now-abandoned thinking cap of the original Thinker, who was believed dead at the time. Again, as we covered, like I said, back in episode 21 of this show. And used Carmichael as a guinea pig. Cliff used the cap to analyze the device and improve on its design. Implanting a microchip version of the helmet into his own brain, Cliff became a cyberpunk maniac with metahuman powers. As the new Thinker, he was drafted in the Suicide Squad after he tried to kill Oracle and Amanda Waller, which, again, we talked about that last episode. So, and again, yeah, he appeared first over in Firestorm, which I was reading at the time. I love Firestorm, in case I haven't mentioned it yet. Huge Firestorm. So, and again, this was... As the Thinker, he was recreated, if you will, by John Ostrander, who, again, had a very different style for Firestorm, but I enjoyed it. It was different than what was originally done, but I thought it was a good take on it. So, anyways, that is the Thinker, parts 1 and 2, if you will. And now we'll go ahead and move over to the second character profile I have for this episode. We've got the Atom. We're looking at specifically the Adam Cray version. For more on Ray Palmer, version of the Atom, check out Head Speaks, where I'm currently covering the Power of the Atom series. Adam Cray is a fictional superhero appearing in American comic books published by DC Comics. The character is the second Atom, replacing Ray Palmer, who is engaged in an undercover mission against the Micro Squad. Spoilers for upcoming episodes of Head Speaks. Cray impersonated Palmer even took a civilian name, as Palmer had a public hero career. Cray was a member of the Suicide Squad, mainly as a secret weapon. He is the son of Senator Joseph Cray, a disgraced politician who was killed by Deadshot. Adam Cray was created by John Ostrander and Luke McDonald, first appearing in Suicide Squad number 44 in 1990, which again we covered here a few months ago. Actually, I guess it's been a while back. It's been around 6 issues ago, so a couple months back. Even longer by my standard, but that's not true entirely. But anyways, that is the Atom. And again, this was from Wikipedia. This says it's the second Atom. Technically, it was the third, because there was the Golden Age Atom, which was the first one, which wasn't really, he didn't shrink down. He was just a short, strong guy. So, but anyways, yes, for more on the Ray Palmer Atom, like I said, I covered the Sword of the Atom, and I'm currently covering the Power of the Atom series. I'm up to issue, I think I just covered, released issue 14 of that. So definitely check out that, getting near the end of that run. I was hoping to have that done before I got here in the Suicide Squad so I could tie them two together, but didn't have me. But let's go ahead, and we got all the character profiles out of the way for this episode. Let's jump into the issue directly, looking at Suicide Squad issue 50. Cover date, February of 1991. The on sale date, January the 8th of 1990. The cover price, $2. The title was called Debt of Honor. The writer was John Ostrander and Kim Yell. Artist, Jeff Fisherwood. Penciler, Luke McDonald and Grant Meehan. Inker, Carl Kessel. Inker, Todd McLean. Colorist, Tom J. McCraw. Cover credits, again, was penciled by Jeff Isherwood and inked by Carl Kessel. And the editor was Don Raspler. And this was reprinted in Suicide Squad, The Dragon's Horde trade paperback, which came out in 2018. Now on to the cover. So the cover of this one, we've got our Suicide Squad logo in white. It's got a black background, some smoke in the background. There's a shadow of a tree. And it looks like we're in a graveyard or something. Along the top, not along the top, but on the top right edge, underneath the Suicide Squad and the DC Bullet and the 50th issue logo on the top left-hand side, we have a splash saying double-sized 50th issue. The cover itself has, we see Nemesis, Amanda, Bronze Tiger, Nightshade, Boomerang, and Deadshot. And they're all basically zombies come walking towards the screen. Beautiful cover. Down at the bottom it says Family Reunion. Yes, it's a very beautiful cover. I mean, if you can use beautiful for zombies walking towards you, very nice rendition for what it is. Again, yeah, you can see Boomerang's front and center with Amanda, followed by Nemesis, and then bringing up the back, we have Deadshot, Bronze Tiger, and Nightshade, and they're all walking. I say Deadshot and Bronze Tiger, and even Nightshade to an extent has their head tilted at an angle, walking kind of that funky zombie stumbling walk. Boomerang, his face is almost a skull at this point. It's very nice, very creepy drawing. I like the way they did this. Again, I got to give kudos to both Jeff Isherwood and Carl Kessel. They did a fantastic job in showing the horror of the Suicide Squad as zombies. Very nice. Again, this is something I wouldn't mind having blown up as a poster and hanging on my wall here. So, again, over my G.I. Joe show, I rate comics on a scale of 1 to 5 Yo-Jo Colas. Along the same lines, if I was to rate this one, I would give this a 5. Very nice. Good job. So the story starts out, we get kind of a flashback from back in the Brave and the Bold time when we had the Suicide Squad with Rick and Karen and Jeff and other, which I forgot their name now. But again, as I've talked about before, back then there was always that three-way love interest with Karen in the middle and all the guys jonesing over. But Karen and Rick were in love. So the two guys, you know, they kind of pet their feelings for Karen aside, if you will. And they're like, oh, this is for the team. We'll do this for the team. Da, da, da. And again, as I never did finish those issues just because I thought the writing, I don't want to say lazy. It was, I guess, over the top. I was trying to think of the best word to describe it. It was just too much of the love interest for, you know, the two guys jonesing after Rick's girlfriend. And, oh, well, we can't have her, but we'll do it for the team. Oh, woe is me. So we're starting the story out along the same storyline. The title of this is Debt of Honor on this first page here. And we see, again, the four members of the Suicide Squad climb a mountain. We have Rick Flag, Karen, Grace. And then we also, following them, we have, what's her name? Hugh Evans and Jess Bright falling behind them. And I believe this is Hugh bringing up the telling going, I could kill them both. Oh, no, it's Jeff. Sorry, it's Jeff Wright complaining that he could kill them both. And again, they're kind of bellyaching because, again, Rick and Karen have fallen in love. And they were trying to keep it secret from their group because they didn't want to interfere with the dynamics of the group because they thought they were a good team. And they didn't want their love affair, if you will, to cause any friction, which apparently it's doing. And so Jeff is, you know, he's saying he blames Flag. Not Jeff, sorry, Hugh. Is he blames Flag more than Karen? And they're talking about how when they get back to civilization, they're going to quit because the world doesn't really need the Suicide Squad anymore. And as they're talking, they find a bridge, and Rick Flag's like, well, there's a bridge. I don't know how much weight it's going to hold, so I'll go first and test it. Jeff is like, always the hero, kind of snarky. And as they're getting ready to cross, a Yeti shows up. And Rick's like, you three go ahead, I'll hold it off. Jess is like, and then what? You're the one who knows how to get across. You're the one who knows how to get the skills to get us back to civilization. If you die here, we all die. Jeff and I'll hold it off. You get Karen across for the good of the team. And that's what they kept saying. That was Brave and the Bold issues. You know, for the good of the team. For the good of the team. And so Rick's like, you're right. Let's go, Karen. And Karen, at this point, she's all upset because, you know, the guys are always fighting over her. And they're always sacrificing things for her. And she's like, no. No more sacrifices for me. And Rick knocks her, just one punch knocks her. I'm sorry, Karen, as he knocks her out. And again, I pause and I can see. Hugh's like, move a flag. I don't know how long we can keep this beast at bay. And so Hugh and Jeff are shooting at the Yeti, trying to hold it back. And as Rick starts crossing, the bridge starts breaking. He jumps across and him and Karen get saved. Meanwhile, the Yeti and Jeff and Hugh go falling to their deaths, end quote. And I'm just going through this slow as I reread this to make sure I'm getting my facts straight as I talk about this. So yeah, so the inside of the cliff and Hugh hits a rock. We see him just splatter. I love this here on page 5. We see Jeff hit a rock and just blood comes splattering out of him. As the Yeti hits the snow and Jeff lands in the snow and Jeff stands up. He's like, I'm alive. I'm alive. Flag, you basher. Don't leave me here. I'm alive. He's abandoned me. I'm going to die unless I find some shelter and fast. But where? And again, so and again, he's complaining. He's going to have to cut the Yeti open, crawl inside. Kind of a Star Wars Empire Strikes Back moment where Han cuts open the Tauntaun to shove Luke and himself inside. We've got Jeff cutting open the Yeti to crawl inside to survive. And he's crawling. He's like, they left me here. Karen the Flag abandoned me. They set it up. Meant to kill me. But I won't die out here. I won't. So again, so is he crawling inside to hide the winter out, if you will, or at least the worst of it in this Yeti? He's blaming Karen and Rick, thinking, you know, that they set him up to die. When clearly any rational person can see that, you know, it wasn't something they intentionally did. It's just something that happened. They were attacked by the Yeti. And to defend themselves, or not defend themselves, but to try to save themselves, you know, Rick offered to stay, but Hugh, the one that died, said, no, you go, we'll hold them off, because without you, we can't get out here anyways. I don't know why either Hugh or Jeff, one of them didn't stay, and the three of them tried to get out, but that's not what happened. So again, since we're starting out the story with Jeff vowing revenge against Karen and Rick for leaving him here to die, you can pretty much guess where the story's going. I don't know if it's... again, part of the problem with those Brave and the Bold issues was that the characters always seemed a little, put it nicely, a little mentally unstable, I guess. And it's just more of it here. Again, they're, you know, wanting to sacrifice themselves for Karen. They're upset with Rick and Karen for having their, you know, falling in love with each other. It just got old quickly. That's why I didn't finish reviewing those stories. I may eventually. I don't know yet. I still like Shag says, find your joy. As I'm rediscovering, reading this, just the beginning of this issue, those Brave and the Bolds with the Suicide Squad doesn't fill me with much joy. So I don't know if I'll ever get back to them just because, yeah, I this year's annoying me and there's only a couple pages out of it. So, but beautiful artwork. I mean, I'm not complaining about the artwork. It's great. Like I said, as they hit the, as Hugh hits the rock, I love seeing it as it splatters. We see his blood come gushing out his back as he hits the rock. It's beautiful artwork. I love the Yeti they've got here. I didn't talk much about that. There's a Yeti jumping at him. It's very, it's not a, it's big, but it's very muscular, very lean, if you will. Very nice features on the creature. Here on page 4, as we're following, we get a nice close-up of the Yeti's face as he is attacking Jeff. And Hugh, I'm sorry, I keep saying Jeff, Jess and Hugh, very nice. So, and I guess that's why, because in the comic they call him Jeff, but I'm looking at the DC.fandom.com a wiki page for it, and they're referring to him as Jess. So apparently somewhere in the way it got mixed up from Jess to Jeff. So so that's why I'm getting mixed up on the name. So originally it was Jess, and in this story they're calling him Jeff. Just looking to see. They don't really mention much about, he's Jess. There's no mention of Jeff. We'll assume Jeff was just a typo and it should have been Jess. He calls him Jeff a couple of times. A retcon or a typer error. So anyways, we'll call him Jess because that's what, again, the wiki page calls him, because that's who he should be. So anyway, some days later, apparently Jess is trapped in the mountain and some Chinese soldiers are looking for the Suicide Squad still. And again, he's like, the only way to get out of this is surrender. So again, he stands up and he's got this Yeti, as they say, costume, body draped up over him. The Yeti's up over the top of his head, trying to keep him warm. And as he thinks here, he's like, his mouth's frozen shut. So he's trying to call for help. And all he's doing is... And so it sounds like the Chinese have their guns pointed at him to shoot him, thinking he's the Yeti. And all of a sudden, Jess falls over. And afraid of getting in trouble, he decided not to shoot the Yeti. They take it to the commander. And we cut to several months later where Jess is in a hospital with a Chinese doctor looking over him. His name is Deng Zhaoji. He's a scientist. And he says he has a proposition for him. And as Jess wakes up, he notices that his hands are all wrapped up. And we find out that he has some severe frostbite. And they amputated his fingers. And they also apparently had to cut away his toes and his lips and his nose as well due to the frostbite. And again, he said the scientist said his government's preparing a task force to ensure how to develop the metahumans of their own. And they think it may be something in his genetic structure. So he's like, we'll give you a deal. We'll declare you a special visitor or a special person whose special rights will be given if you help us. And he's like, will you help us? Yeah. And he's like, you now have a new name, Yang Wong, King of the Devils, for devils only, for what we are to seek, for devils or Oni are what we seek to create. May the gods protect and forgive us both. So again, so Jess is laid up in a Chinese hospital. He's had his nose, his lips, and his fingertips amputated due to frostbite. So again, if you thought he was losing it before, just think about how bad he's got it now. How bad it is getting before him now, blaming Rick and Karen, even though him and Hugh are the ones that offered to stay behind, which is kind of annoying. I understand that it's supposed to be, I guess he's supposed to be a little insane, but I don't know. I find it annoying that they volunteered to stay back because Rick volunteered to, but what are you, a hero? You're the one that knows to get out of here. You have to take care and get out of here. And then they fell off a cliff. And Hugh died. He got crushed. So what is Rick to think? But he thinks he died. So it's not that he abandoned him. He just thought that they sacrificed himself. So I find it, again, not to fault John or Kim. I don't know whose idea this was for the story idea or the story arc. But, and again, it's kind of in character because Jess and Hugh was always seemed a little mentally off anyways. The way they kept whining about, how they have to do it for the team, sacrifice for the team. But I don't know. They're annoying, but they're for the, at least Jess is going to be part of the story. And we got several years later, the present time for the comic. We have Amanda and Simon LaGreve, Dr. LaGreve, talking over Cliff's unconscious body. And again, LaGreve is kind of complaining, this is not Bell Rev. You can't hold Carmichael here against his will. It's basically kidnapping. Because again, they're no longer in the prison. Bell Rev, where Amanda usually pulls her squad from. But again, Amanda being Amanda, she's like, she tells him basically, you've seen this play out. At worst, he'll get sent to an asylum. At best, with his powers, he'll be up and gone in a day. She's like, my way's better. Oracle's working on a program, basically a conscience that he doesn't have right now to kind of help him. They can put into the microchip and kind of give him a conscience, give him so he's not a psychotic killer anymore. But to do that, they can't turn him over to the government, because otherwise the government's, that's a problem that people complain about nowadays about the, especially I'm in California, a lot of people complain about, they don't want to prosecute shoplifters. And I know there's a recent Law and Order along the same lines about, no, it wasn't Law and Order, it was Blue Bloods. On a recent episode of Blue Bloods, one of the cops caught a shoplifter when she was in her regular identity, when she wasn't on duty. And they took him into the station and anyways, they didn't want to charge him because it's more effort than it's worth and all that. But so again, I'm going off on a tangent here. So even back in the 80s and 90s, they had similar problems with the government's especially in comics, to get away from real world for a minute, back to comic books, what we're talking about, in comic books especially, killers and psychos and everything was always either released or escape prison or whatever it may be. So Amanda's not wrong when she says, you know, if we release him to, you know, the government, they're going to have him in jail, and they'll release him, he'll get out on his own, whatever it may be, within weeks he'll be out on the street again. She's like, with, you know, I'll have Oracle come up with a conscious program, if you will, that we can input to make him so he's not a psychotic killer. And Bob's your uncle. And LeGree's like, if such a thing is feasible, it's damn unethical. In any case, it'll take time to develop. What about short term? You plan on keeping him in a coma for months? And I like this. Amanda is very much Amanda. Like I've complained about before with some of the newer versions of interpretations of Amanda. She's not a villain. Again, she's not going to, in the Suicide Squad movie, she's not going to kill her own support staff because they've seen too much. That's not Amanda Waller. But this is. She's very much, well, it wouldn't bother me. But you and Oracle have a cow. It wouldn't bother me a bit, but you and Oracle wouldn't like it, so we can't do that. We said Oracle should have a short-term solution in a day or two, and they just want to keep Cliff doped up and under wraps until then so he doesn't bust loose and do any more damage. And Amanda's all, is that unreasonable? And Simon's all, amazing. I didn't think the word reasonable was in your vocabulary. My, we are testy. Are these things okay at home? Are things okay at home? Like, they're fine. And we'll leave Carmichael as he is. This is something else you need to deal with. And at this point, General Jeb Stuart came in. Again, I mentioned him last episode. JB, or Jeb Stuart. He was a star of a comic back in the 50s, I want to say, or 60s. Jeb Stuart, the Haunted Tank. Now he's a general. And so she comes in and says that she needs the squad to rescue a child that's been kidnapped. And here at the bottom of page 10, when you say, I need the squad to rescue a child that's been kidnapped, the boy is the only son of Richard Rogers Flag. Will you help? And Amanda's face, like a close-up of Amanda's face, like, what? Dun-dun-dun type thing. I love the expression on Amanda's face here. It's not often you catch Amanda flat-footed or leave her speechless, but yeah, Jeb Stuart coming in saying that it's a debt of honor we both owe to a man that's now dead. It's Rick Flagg's son. I do love the look on Amanda's face. It's just fantastic. Yeah, I think, again, I don't know how the penciling details broke down, but yeah, between Luke and Grant and Carl inking this, and again, even Tom doing the colors on this, just fantastic. Just the shadowing in her eyes, the shadow on her face, and just the look, extreme close-up and the look of her face. As you know, she's like, what? Rick Flagg had a son? The hell you say? And then we cut somewhere else where you see Rick's son running away from, looks like a zombie version. I'm going to say it, going to a zombie version of Mindbogger, possibly. Running, we see the kid surrounded by a bunch of zombies. And then we see the lead zombie come walking up, calling himself Konachi, the Deathless. Please forgive me for butchering that horribly. And basically, it's kind of hard to tell from here. But if you know what, now that I know who it is, looking first, I'm like, I'm not quite sure who these guys are. But we can see Rivon, and we can see, I forget, the Manticore here. So we've got some of the members that the squad's fought before. Surrounding the little boy. And again, we cut to someone outside of the a building. It's the Institute of Metahuman Studies and all that. So we're going, his what? And we find out Amanda's talking to Ben, aka Bronze Tiger. And he's like, his son, Ben. Amanda, I knew it pretty well. He had no son. And apparently he didn't know he had a son. Apparently Karen was pregnant when the previous squad broke up. She had a nervous breakdown, and she blocked the kid from her mind after his birth. And apparently General Stuart placed the kid with some friends. And he wanted Karen to be the one to tell Rick about young Rick. But, well, we saw what happened. Karen was a little insane, and then she died. So she never got around to telling Rick. And, again, Ben asked, why didn't Stuart tell Rick, you know, after that? Amanda says he blames on Rick's deteriorating mental state. I think he was too ashamed at not having said anything earlier. The face flag. And she's like, basically, water under the bridge. Now, we need to find the rescue the boy and a strictly volunteer. You in? He's like, oh, yeah. I owe the man a lot. I'm in. And he's like, who else are you going to look for? Lawton? Boomerbutt? I said, no, I can't really see them giving a damn. Can you? No, I think we're going to have to talk to some old friends. And as they walk away, we see Deadshot, Floyd, standing behind the wall, smoking a cigarette, listening as Amanda and Ben walk away from where he was at. And again, here on bottom of page 13, the whole thing's great artwork. Like I've said before, it's darker, in quotes, than I like. A lot of heavy inking. I know the Milestone books, in my opinion, had a lot of heavy inking, which I didn't really care too much for, didn't like. all the heavy inking they did on it, but here it fits for the Suicide Squad. Like I say, for my traditional superheroes, I like more full color, you know, the four color sensation and all that. But for Suicide Squad, for being what it is, for being a darker, heavier book, I do like the heavy inks and the darker colors on beautiful. And then we're back to wherever Rick Flag Jr.'s at, and the zombies are sitting around watching the kid as he lays there. And one of the zombies is looking at the kid, and we see a picture of Rick and Rick's dad superimposed over the kid, the little Rick's dad and little Rick's grandfather. And the zombie look at him, the war, the Chinese crossing the U-Haul, cutting us off. I thought I was going to die then. We get a flashback to this private or whoever he is. Again, I'm terrible at military ranks. Hiding in a dugout, but that's not it. What was it called? One of the trenches they're hiding in. And someone lands next to him with a parachute. And the guy that lands like, the kid's like, don't kill me, don't kill me, I surrender. And the guy takes the parachute off. He's like, relax, kid, you'll fail your foxhole. And that's what's called foxhole. Captain Richard Montgomery Flagg's the name, and I'm more or less on your side. You shoot it into your bombardment? Where are you, crazy? Close enough. I run the Suicide Squad. We're sent in to get you and the other soldiers out of Hungum so you can be evacuated. Are you nuts? This area's crawling of Chinese communist troops. I know. Have to fight our way out. Fight our way out? Are you totally insane? Look, kid, it's that or surrender or get killed. I don't know about you, but I have no desire to stay in Korea and 1 second longer than I have to, and I sure as hell don't want to be buried here. And one of the other guys, Skip, one of his buddies comes running up to him. The soldier's like, you're all going to be killed. Everybody dies, kid. Look, just follow along. We'll get you out. After that, I suggest you go home, shoot yourself in the foot or something, get sent home. Because you sure the hell ain't made to be a soldier, kid. And again, the kid here on bottom page 16 is looking all pissed off at Rick for saying that. But again, you're crying that, you know, you surrender as soon as someone lands in the foxhole with you. And he's like, let's get out of here. He's like, you're going to get us all killed. You're not made out to be a soldier. No offense. Again, I'm not a soldier. That's why I'm sitting my fat butt at home recording podcasts instead of out fighting in the wars around the world. But yeah, you're not a soldier, kid. You're not made to be a soldier. And that's fine. Not everybody's the same. There are some people like Rick Flag and his dad and other people like that's made for soldiering. I mean, I got friends that I podcast with. Jared and Chad are both military men. They're made for the soldiering life. Me, I'm a fat ass that's going to sit here, my sugar-free Reese's, and podcasts about comic books. We've all got our strengths. We've all got our weaknesses. So look at my strengths, but that's another story entirely. But again, just here on page 16, just the anger in this kid's face as he's sitting there looking at Rick as Rick's trying to get them, trying to save him, get him out of here. But he's looking at Rick like, you know, Rick's a scum of the earth. And we cut to present day where the same ghoul is sitting there. We get a close-up of his face. So again, in case you're a little slow, this segue here is to let us know that this one zombie is the same person that was in the foxhole that Rick told, you know, going home. So that zombie gets up, starts to walk away. We cut elsewhere where we get some guy being escorted out by the police or security. I'm not quite sure which it is. He's like, but I'm me. And one of the cops is like, sorry about this, Mr. Sanders. But he burst in right before he would stop him. And again, we got these two guys that look alike. One in a nice suit, sitting there at a table, looking nonplussed. And another guy, you know, shirt's untucked, his tie's hanging out, doesn't have a jacket on. But it's just the same way, without the jacket. That's not Jack Sanders, you overgrown hunk of beef. I'm Jack Sanders. That's an imposter. He changed all the access codes. Even the fingerprints of my file. I woke up in the gutter. He's stolen my life. And the card's like, you want us to bounce this lunatic, Mr. Sanders? No, I don't think so. The man is deranged. Perhaps Bellevue should be a better. And he's like, he's talking to his secretary. He's like, Ms. Ewell, I'm leaving now. I'm using my private elevator. I've signed my resignation effectively. Would you see the board of directors get it? And let them know that the assets of the corporation have been turned over to the employees. My own goods I've donated to charity as I'm going to a monastery in Tibet. The guy that's being held, he's like, who are you? What do you want? Why are you ruining my life? And again, the guy, the well-dressed Mr. Sanders, like, this company was bought strictly with the intent of getting it for tax purposes. It seems unfair to fire a lot of people, ruin their lives, and destroy a reasonably sound company just to make some money for a small group of men. And as the guard's escorting him out, he's like, come on, it's perfectly legal. It happens all the time. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's just. Take them away, boys. And with the guards or whatever they are, I'm assuming they're guards at this point, watching this whole scene, it seems like they'd be suspicious of who's who when you have two guys that look alike, and especially with the dialogue going down here. But for the sake of our story, they drag the guy out. Again, as a guard, you think they would question about who's really who. Neither here nor there. And so after they leave, this Mr. Saunders, the one in the nice suit, goes to the elevator, and as he gets in the elevator to leave, he releases the gas on his face, revealing that it's actually Tom Tresser, a.k.a. Nemesis. So again, so Nemesis, who was impersonating this this corporation guy, trying to do right. What once went wrong? Nice tagline. Anyway, he goes down the garage, and man is waiting for him. And he's like, Waller, what do you want? I mean, I meant it when I said I was through with the Suicide Squad. Like, you're going to want in on this. And he's like, who told you that, Waller? The same one who told me where to find you. And Nightshade pops up. She said, came to me first. When I heard what you wanted, I insisted on bringing you in this. I knew you'd want that. Again, so they catch up Tom with Rick and his unknown son that he didn't know about. He died not knowing about him. The boy's been kidnapped. And she's like, for Rick's sake, we have to save his baby. And Tom's like, I won't work for Waller ever again. Damn it all, Tresser. I don't care much of you either. But damn it, man, you owe Rick. As far as I'm concerned, you could have rotten that Russian cell, but Flag went in and got you pulled out, even though he had to face off against the entire frickin' Justice League International. You gonna abandon Flag's only son? That's not what I said, Waller. I'm coming on this little adventure. You have to shoot me to stop me, but I'm not working for you. I'll work with you. Whatever works. We need you on this one, Tresser. And again, this is referring to stories back, way back. I think that was issue like 5 of the Suicide Squad series, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, again, I like that they're pulling way back. And so we continue the story with Nemesis, dressed up as Rick Flag, parachuting into a prison. I'm calling it a prison. It's the, I'm sorry, it's the airport. It was the fake airport that was built in the Cracky Desert, where they had their murderous dry run, in quotes, before the droid was made operational. And they fill in, apparently, as I was saying, the little boy's name is Rick, because why not? And they, apparently he's in the hands of one of the surviving members of the Jihad, named Korashki, the Deathless. Apparently, Nightshade, when she was undercover over there, met him, and his name is Russia, but he didn't talk like one. We don't know why, but they took the boy, and we find out that this Kuroshi guy doesn't know that Rick Flag died back setting off that atomic bomb back over in the, I think it was the Genesis Directive. So he wants Rick Flag to come alone, so that's why Nemesis is dressed up. Now, like here, as Nemesis is landing, we don't see who it is. We see basically Rick's flag, someone Rick's flag's clothes land, take off his helmet. We get a close up here on the bottom of page one. Yeah, page 21, we see a close up of Rick Flag. Korashki, I'm really messing up that name, I know I am, is standing there. And again, it looks basically Korashki is in a purple suit that's all tattered with no sleeves, a headband. He's got like silver stripes or a silver band or whatever around his waist and his belt and his ankles, his legs, his wrist, arms. And as he holds a gun on him, he's like, come, Rick, is that any way to greet an old team member? And Rick or Nemesis like, you? Oh, Rick, don't tell me you don't recognize your old friend Jeff Bright. And in quotes, Rick is like, Bright? I know I've changed a great deal. You're responsible for that. You and Karen, don't worry. I'll explain it all to you. You die. I want you to understand why you're going. And then we have the Suicide Squad team proper getting ready to teleport in and help. And again, we get a little bit of Amanda asking Nightshade if that range is within her distance of her powers. Because at one time, she could only go about 20 miles. And Nightshade tells us that was before the succubus entered her. Now, this is no problem. She just has control. That's passed through a shattered dimension. It used to be her world. And she's saying that the succubus is much more stronger in there. And that's why she doesn't teleport anymore, because it's too dangerous. But to save Rick the Third, I'd say Rick Jr. Jr. Rick the Third, she's willing to make that sacrifice. And Amanda's like, in and out. That's all I ask. We know that Korashki actually resurrected Mindboggler's body to work with him. He may have others. The three of us got our work cut out for him. All of a sudden, Deadshot's out. They're gonna make it 5. Deadshot? What the hell you want on this for? No reason. Reason you care? Nope. I'll take what I can get. Amanda's like, because he drags Boomerang, who's laying unconscious. And Amanda's like, does Boomerang know he's volunteered? Free we tell him when we got there. So I love Deadshot. Again, he's got this rival with Boomerang. So I love the fact he's like, we'll tell him when we get there. It's no big deal. Again, I love here as they're talking over Boomerang's unconscious body. Boomerang's sleeping like a baby. He's got like a little smile on his face. He's having good dreams. Wait till he gets through. And again, Deadshot continues on. Pat Harkness in a position where his life's in danger. He'll do what he always does. Fight like hell, get out. And Amanda's like, we've been working together too long, Lawton. Because again, they're thinking alike. So I like that Floyd doesn't need to do this. And he's not saying why. Maybe we'll find out more later. Maybe we just have to assume that he's growing a bit of a conscience. And as I said previously, and I'll say it again before this series is done, I'm sure One thing I love about Suicide Squad and the way that John's writing it, he's given these characters character. He's given personalities. I mean, before this, Deadshot was like a one-trick pony. He was always trying to kill Batman, never succeeded, blah, blah, blah. Rinse and repeat. But John has given Deadshot a background and given him motivation, characterization, and he's making these actual characters and actual people, if you will. So I do like, and I more than like, I love what John does with these people, and I'm sorry, John and Kim does with these characters. Fantastic. He makes them actual people you want to care about. And so Nightshade opens up a portal, and Deadshot, again, I'm chuckling at this, Deadshot drags Boomerang through the portal, and they go through the Nightshade dimension. And again, nice panel here on page 24, mid-panel. We get Nightshade floating through the interdimensional world, the Nightshade world, whatever it is, with Amanda and Bronze, Tiger, Boomerbutt, and Deadshot falling behind her. And then we cut back to the airport, where, in quotes, Rick Flag is talking to Jeff, or Jess. They keep calling him Jeff, so we're going to... I'm going to revert back to Jeff because that's what we're referring to him as the story as. And he's like, so how'd you get to this point? And he's like, oh, your concern is very touching, Rick. Don't worry, you'll hear it all before you die. You need to know. You need to understand. Just you did to me. And so again, so he goes into more of his background, his history. He talks about he was trained as a physicist, but working with Dang, he was soon absorbed in genetic theory. And as they're working, and he's still longing for Karen and the memory of her betrayal. They're banning him. And again, so again, he's working from a false premise to begin with. But again, this happens in real life. People have their own false reasons for doing things, or however you want to phrase it. But it's very much a realistic thing that happens. So and again, he's got a mask over his head as he's working with just eye holes, because again, his face is deformed. He lost his nose and his lips. And some Russian or some Chinese guards come busting in. And apparently, we find out that the scientist Deng is a bit of a dissident, and he wasn't working under anyone's authority. He was doing it on his own. And so, you know, he's like, I'm afraid I'm going to be sent to the fields for education if I don't get shot out right. Our work is closed for now. Farewell, my friend. And so again, so that, as it says here, the political tides in China had ebbed and flowed again. He was wreckage rotting in a cell. Deng was not politically correct, in quotes. And Jeff was a foreigner and a suspected spy. And here on the bottom of page 5, we have Zastro, who we know from Ostrander's other work. He's appeared in Suicide Squad previously, and as I mentioned elsewhere, he showed up in Firestorm, again, part of Ostrander's universe, which I love. So we know, as he says here, he represents the USSR. They know of his work, and they value it, and they could use him out of his town. We were prepared to help physical limitation as well. He says there's no love lost between China and Russia. Zastro got him out, made him good on the rest of his promises. They gave him with a foot, set a can, and again, he says, I was rebaptized again. So again, instead of with a mask and sitting in a chair, they actually got him walking and able to use his hands. They gave him an artificial nose, kind of like on Pennyworth. That's where I was trying to think where it was at. That series Pennyworth on Max, about Alfred Pennyworth, there was one of the bad guys that had his nose destroyed, and he had a metal nose. Kind of like that. I like that. And again, he's like, for security reasons, you are no longer to be called Feng Wong. Your code name is now Koshki, whatever it is, for magician and myth, Koshkeki, the deathless, who kept his soul and an egg, his body. And so he began working on the Rocket Red program. We see him working on members of the Jihad. We see Manicore and behind him, Jaquil, the Manicore, the Jinn. They were all his creations in one way or another, most especially Manicore. He was my son. If you blew all that up in my fist, well, didn't you? And this is when the Suicide Squad with Rick Flag attacked him. And again, he's going to ring off his lab. He sees Rick Flag there from back in the day. But an explosion knocks him down, again, blasts him from behind. And again, we see that he has been once again restructured, resurrected. That's the word I'm looking for. English is hard sometimes. He was resurrected looking like we see him now, more of a zombie. Apparently his brain was goaded back into life using technology that he had created, while the rest of his body remained dead. I was trapped in the fate I had planned for you and Karen. So he planned on doing this, petting their minds into a zombie-type body. But again, if you do bad stuff gets visited upon you, as he finds out here. And you learn that Karen had died, but Flag still lives. Karen perished. She escaped me, but Flag. It was I who purposed the attack on Manhattan and you out of hiding. They had to bow to my insistence. As attack failed, as you know, an electrical charge and feedback through zombies damaged. I knew I needed help, so I've created my own squad, a death squad. I've heard of your turning rogue, but of course I didn't. But you did drop from sight rather completely. Through contacts, I learned of your and Karen's son. The rest, you already know. And again, so Rick, in quotes, is asking to see his son. He's like, can I still see? He's still alive, right? Of course he's in no danger, immediate danger, nor are you. For the rest of the squad to show up. And Rick is like, what? Let's not pretend, Rick. Of course they're coming. They wouldn't let you do this alone. I want them dead, too. I have explosions planted throughout this Earth's Isle little airport. I'm just waiting for your rescuers to show up. Then we'll all die together. You, me, the boy, and the Suicide Squad. Again, here again on the bottom of page 28, just a very nice, extreme close-up of Rick, a.k.a. Nemesis' face, as he hears that his entire team is about ready to be killed off. Very nice work in this book, as I keep saying. Very nice. And then we cut to elsewhere in the airport where the portal opens and Nightshade with the rest of the squad comes stumbling out and Nightshade's laughing like the Joker. And Waller's like, knock off the laughter, Nightshade. Last thing we need is to announce our arrival. Oh, Eve Eden's not here anymore, Ms. Waller. I'm back. And we find that's actually Enchantress taking over Nightshade's body. And we cut back over to Rick and Jeff. Koishki, whatever his name is, facing off against one another, Rick, in quotes, is like, you miscalculated, Jeff. All this for nothing. And why is that, Rick? Do tell me. I'm already dead. And he releases his gas. And again, so yeah, his hands are tied behind him, and next thing his hands are free as he's releasing the gas that removes his mask. I'm already dead. Flag died setting off an atomic device inside Jotunheim. There's no reason to kill anyone else. Flag and Karen are both gone. And Jeff's like, no! There's the child. There's the squad. There's you. As he tries shooting at Nemesis, who dodges. Again, like this here on page 30, we have Nemesis and a couple of zombies behind him as Jeff hits Nemesis, knocking him back. Looks like he knocks him out. He's like, there's still the boy. And meanwhile, we cut back over to Enchantress fighting the team. Aren't you happy to see me again, darling? I'm glad to see all of you. And at this point, Boomerang wakes up. Bloody hell, what's going on? And he looks up and he sees zombie mind boggler standing over him. Bloody hell, bloody hell. What have you lot dragged me into? As he tries to run away again. And this is one thing that I think they really did wrong in the first. I've complained about this. I'm going to do it again. One thing they did wrong in the first Suicide Squad movie, again, as I said there, they had a more of a soccer hooligan looking for a fight. Yes, Boomerang talks big, but when it comes down to it, this is who Boomerang is. If he can't fight easily, he's going to run away from it if at all possible. So I still don't like the way they portrayed Boomerang in the movie. I thought they did it wrong. But anyways, that's neither here nor there. I like here the Boomerang's running away from Mindbogger and these other zombies. I can't quite tell who they are because, again, it's very close up in white, but looked like one of maybe Ravon. And so, again, the Suicide Squad starts fighting off against the zombie Jihad. Nightshade or Enchantress sets Manticore on fire. What fire should finish you? Fall, you imbecile, fall. And Manticore grabs Nightshade or Enchantress and starts choking her. Meanwhile, Nemesis catches up with Jeff and Rick Flag Jr. Rick Flag the third, I guess. He's like, pet him down. He's done nothing to you. He's a living symbol of love that destroyed my life. The sins of the father be visited upon the children. There is no innocent. As he releases the failsafe device or whatever it is, the self-destruct mechanism. There's an explosion again here on page 33. On page 33, there's a bunch of explosions. There's an explosion from Nemesis and Jeff and then Rick the third around. There's one blowing up behind Amanda, throwing everybody everywhere. We have Raven facing off once again. Ravon versus Bronze Tiger once again. And again, as they're fighting, he's like, that's right. We never get around to that final battle between us, did we? Let's do it. And so they start. And again, here on page 34, it's just an all-out fight. We got Mind Boggler attacking Boomer Butt. We get Ravon and Boomerang fighting. We get the Weasel attacking Amanda, but Amanda's just putting bullets into his head. Blam, blam, blam. Nightshade fighting against the Manticore. I'm sorry, Enchantress fighting against the Manticore. No, I can't die. Not again. Enchantress. And she says her name, making herself, again, go back to where she came from, letting Eve come back. Damn you, it's too bright out here. There's no shadows for me to command. Because again, that's Eve, or Nightshade's power is controlling shadows. No shadows, there's not a lot she can really do. And we cut to Amanda shooting at a couple of the previous Suicide Squad members. Come on, you hoodoos. I sent you to death once, I sure the hell can do it again. Just fantastic dialogue, Amanda, just being as brave as she is. Just, you know what, I pitch you down once, I'll do it again. Damn you to hell. And then we get Nemesis talking to Jeff. Kokishi, listen to me. The child's not a symbol of what you lost, but what you might have had. Yes, the boy is Rick's, but he could have been yours. If he had been just a little different, he would have been yours. He's all you left of your love for Karen. He's all that's left of Karen. Or didn't you ever actually really love her? And Jeff stops and thanks for him. Here, take the boy. For Karen's sake. So what I'm guessing, again, I'm going to air it myself in the story for a minute. So apparently, Jeff Bright, the Korean War, was saved by Rick's dad. And eventually would go on to join the Suicide Squad with Rick's... with Rick Flag. I don't know how well the timeline works up there. I guess, yeah, he was a younger kid in the Korean War. And, yeah, place it 20 years later. He's a bit of an older guy. Maybe a bit older too old for Karen at that point. But I don't know. But apparently that's the kid that Rick Sr. told to shoot himself because he's not going to be a soldier is the same one that has been blaming Rick for his death. Probably. But we see here again, another on page 36, 35. Page 35, we get a close-up of Jess's face, and we can see the sorrow. Again, it's just a fantastic image. You can see the sorrow on the zombie's face as he realizes what Nemesis is saying is true. He's like, here, take the boy, for Karen's sake. And he releases young Rick to Nemesis. He's like, there's a secondary bomb. We're going to explode within 5 minutes. Escape if you can. I have tapped all the mercy that is left in me. Run. Run! Run, Barry, run. I'm sorry, wrong show. And so Nemesis picks up Rick the third, and takes off running. Again, we cut back to, again, just all-out fight. Again, Boomerang is on the ground with Mindballer choking him. Manticore still fighting Nightshade. Bronze Tiger is still fighting Ravon. Deadshot is pinning bullets and somebody. I'm not sure who at that point. And also, a Boomerang, it looks like, hits. And okay, so on this top panel, I see a Boomerang flying. So, okay, there it is. I see what it is. I missed that. So, as Mindbogger has Boomerang on the ground, he lets loose a boomerang, which flies around, comes back, because that's what boomerangs do. Otherwise, as Kevin Wilson says, it's just a stick otherwise. Hits her in the back of the neck, in quotes, killing her again. And I guess this what triggers Amanda to let her know what's going on. She's like, damn me, of course. The disc that controlled the hoodoos are on the back of the neck. Listen up, destroy the discs in their neck, and their body meat falls. So again, while Boomerang is a bit of a coward and a bit of a weenie, he actually was, in quotes, responsible for saving the day, end quotes. Because, again, he was able to make it so Amanda could find a way to kill these guys. Which is this next page, page 37, is them mopping up Deadshot shooting the disc out. And, again, just the rest of the team is just breaking the control collars or whatever it is, the control disc in their necks, dropping these zombies. And Boomerang's like, oh, where the bugger am I? Which of you blatant ambassadors is responsible for being here? And about this time, Nemesis comes running up with Rick's son. I've got him. We got the kid. We got to get out of here. There's a second set of bombs about to blow. And Amanda's like, come on, Eve, let's move it. I can't. Even if there was enough shadows, I couldn't. I might lose control again. Amanda's like, you've got to do it. You're a girl. If Rick Flag ever meant anything, you got to at least try. And as Nightshade's opening a portal, she's like, Rick. And then across from that, we see Jeff or Jess or whatever you want to call him. Karen. Think he's a Karen. As he's thinking about the love he lost. And they're both thinking about the loves they've lost, Rick and Karen. As the building explodes, and we go back to the Institute, where we have the team, you know, checking their injuries. And, you know, Rick Jr., I'm sorry, Rick the Third is, you know, in Amanda's arms. Mama, mama, mama. And she's like, that's right, baby. It's okay. You're going to go home to your mama? Yes, you are. You don't have to be afraid no more. We saved you. We couldn't save a lot of babies like mine. We saved you, and that's just fine. That's just... Hey, again, go. I love this last panel here on page 38. It looks like it's 38. Just, we get in the background, we see Simon LeGreve just watching as, you know, Boomerang's putting out some fire on his sleeve. Deadshot sitting there with his hands around his knees. Bronze Tiger sitting with his head staring down, you know, just looking at the ground. Nemesis consoling Eve. And I just love this here of Amanda. Because again, as we've talked about in the past, Amanda was a mother who lost her kids. And that's, or most of her kids. And that's what made Amanda who she is. She doesn't want to see any babies lose their life, and she's kind of, you know, she's carried that guilt and that suffering with her that's made her who she is. So again, the fact that she's able to rescue this in quotes, baby and take him home to his mom is a win for her, even though, you know, what they went through. But no one lost their life in this mission, at least none of the good guys, in quotes, good guys. But Amanda's happy that she was able to rescue. And she was, again, this is who Amanda is. She's a good person that does bad things for the right reason. She's not. And again, I keep complaining about it because it really bothers me the way Suicide Squad portrayed her, the movie, as a villain almost. I don't, a lot of the newer books are treating her like a villain. Amanda's not the villain of the story. She, I'm hesitant to say a necessary evil, but she's a necessary evil. She does what needs to be done, and she does, like I say, she does sometimes things in a bad way, but she does it for the right reasons. But again, that ends this double-sized 50th issue of Suicide Squad. Here in the back, in the letters page, they break down who did what on which pages. So pages 1 through 8 was penciled by Jeff Isherwood, by Carl Kiesel. Pages 9 through 14 was by Luke McDonnell and Jeff Isherwood. 15 and 16 was penciled by Grant Misham, inked by Isherwood. 17 through 24 was penciled and inked by McDonnell. And 25 through 27 was penciled by Misham, inked by Isherwood. And 28 through 38 was by McDonnell and Isherwood. And even though they've got different artists, inkers, and pencilers working on this book, to me, and maybe it's just I don't have the right eye for it. I would have to ask my buddy Jared or something. I don't see a huge deviation. I can't tell where one person starts, another person ends, or one person ends, another person starts. It all looks very uniform to me. It looks like all of one piece. I know sometimes when you get different artists working on a book, you may see different styles throughout the book. All these artists, and again, they've all Suicide Squad artists at one point or another. So, I mean, they've all got that style down. But yeah, I can't tell a difference in this. What about you guys? Let me know at TaskForceX@headspeaks.com. I'm not sure I said this before. Currently, my Headcast Network website is down. I'm working on trying to resolve that. But until then, you can email me at TaskForceX@headspeaks.com. But that's going to do it for this double-sized episode, or issue at least, of Suicide Squad. Again, I like here on the coming attractions. It kind of catches up where everyone's at. Where are they now? Luke's still here. He'll be back next month. Pencil a Deadshot Spotlight Tale. Again, remember that hilarious blunder at the airport? Someone has Deadshot's luggage, and he's using the costume's reputation to commit lots of crimes in gay petty. Floyd Lawton goes after this impersonator, and it's grim and gritty action all the way. Carl is off co-writing Hawk and Dove, which is a fantastic book, in my opinion. He's also doing some backup stories in the Newsboy Legion and Superman 54. John Snyder back penciling a four-part Mr. E miniseries, spinning out books of magic. Grant Meehan was over on the forthcoming Just Side of America miniseries. Bob Greenberger said he's still editing the Star Trek and Star Trek Next Generation while filling lots of paper shuffling duties as manager editorial shuffling. Dan returns to this space next month. I look forward to reading your comments on this extravaganza. I thought it was a terrific coda to Rick Flagg's life this year. Now, tell Dan what you think. Until we meet again, Bob Greenberger, beaming back to the Enterprise. So yeah, and again, there's a picture of next issue of Floyd running from someone dressed as Deadshot shooting at him. Again, a wonderful series, a wonderful issue. And again, yeah, I do like the way this kind of, even though I'm not a fan of those Brave and the Bold issues, just because the insistent whining in it, in my opinion, I do like that this kind of ties back to those and kind of neatly ties everything up, and it ends Rick Flagg's story for the most part here. Or does it? We'll see. Anyways, let me know what you think. Be back with us next month as we look at issue 51 of Suicide Squad. Maybe we'll look at 51 and 52. Again, trying to not necessarily get this done quicker, but to get it done quicker. Again, this series only ran 67, 68 issues altogether. So we're coming up to the end of the next year or so. Especially if I start doing two episodes a month or issues a month on this. Yeah, we should wrap it up this year sometime. Thank you everyone that's been a part of this journey so far. Again, we're only on issue 50. There's still another 17 or 18 issues to go. So plenty more episodes of Task Force X coming at you. And then I'm not sure I'm going to end it at that or if I'm going to look into some other Suicide Squad or Checkmate books. We'll see how I'm feeling in the next year or so. But please write into TaskForceX@headspeaks.com and check out all the other podcasts I do. Head Speaks, The Starman Adventure Show, Voyager's Cast, The Starbright Project, and G.I. Joe, A Real American Headcast, all here on the Headcast Network. Until next month, squad mates, dismissed.
listening to another great episode of Task Force X. I can also be found rambling on my main headcast of Ed Speaks, where I rant and rave about movies, comics, geek stuff, and whatever is bugging me.
Mate, you just had Crazy the Joker.
Well, I tried, Boomer, but anyways, my home on the internet is at headspeaks.com. HEADSPEAKS.com. Links to my blog, which contain follow-up information to this and every headcast, can be found there. Both Task Force X and Headspeaks are on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at headspeaks.com under headcasts. Please feel free to email me any questions, comments, or concerns to taskforcex@headspeaks.com. And if you want to record a message, you can send it to me at taskforcex@headspeaks.com, and I'll play it on the air. I'm also on Facebook at Task Force X, and also on Google Plus, you can look for Task Force X under people and pages. All titles and characters discussed are owned and copyrighted by DC Comics. I claim no ownership to the Suicide Squad, Checkmate, or Task Force X. I'm just a big fan wanting to spread the Task Force X love with everyone else. DC Comics can be found on the web at dccomics.com. Be sure to visit your local comic shop and look for Suicide Squad and Checkmate Comics. And while you're there, see what else they have that may interest you. Well, make sure you join us here next time for another fun-filled headcast from your friendly neighborhood, Brotherhead. In the meantime, I'll see you in the funny pages.